If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one game development podcast about game development. I am your host, and Brandon Pham. I got to introduce myself, but no need for an introduction. For my other guests, it is that time of the month. It is a roundtable news episode, and that means we're going to have a panel of game developers giving their opinions on the state of game development regarding on game news, right? So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and switch over to my love cam, to Raymond Graham. I don't know why I keep calling you Ray Charles. And then Richard Q that is joining me, coming from both in California and both from their homes. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, man.
All right. How are you guys staying safe out there?
Is it supposed to be the split screen thing? Or is it
Yeah, man. Just hold on, dude. I'm a one-man team. Give me a sec. All right. So, bam. You can start seeing me right here. But I'm going to switch to your camera, too.
Oh, there we go.
There we go. So, as you can see, we're going to start discussing some topics here. But in the meantime, I want to talk to you guys. What is the status right now? The last time we talked, let's kind of start with Richard. You were mentioning that you were still going to GDC and has changed, right? I mean, how was that? How did that go?
I mean, like a month ago, GDC was still canceled, but like there's like this interesting Reddit thread that I saw where it's like, when did Reddit get serious? Like, when did COVID-19 get serious to you? Right. And it was a serious thread. So, you know, like it's mostly serious. And I think for me, when like the NBA was like canceled, like that's when I was like, oh crap. So this isn't just like, it's real. It's like the real deal. Cause like, you know, NBA makes substantially more money like when they're playing and all that stuff, whereas conventions, it's like whatever, right? So I think like I forget what the turning point was, but it was always very sketchy, like whether or not we were like going to travel to GDC and all that. So we've had to pivot a lot of our plans and everything, and change up a lot of our PR strategies. But yeah, no, like definitely now it's like home quarantine, and you know, I mean, everybody's doing it now, so like it's pretty much the norm now. But like back then, you know, I feel kind of foolish, but I am on record saying, oh, I'm gonna fly to San Francisco. Yeah, that didn't happen. That's not gonna happen for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, Ray was in Ground Zero and he's like, I don't think you're gonna come in here. But Ray, Mr. King of the Castle, how have things changed since this kind of forced remote work from home pretty much across the industry right now?
Yeah, like honestly, for me, I haven't really missed a beat, right? I already work from home a lot already. I have meetings with people all around the world. So really, whether I'm in the office or at my house, it doesn't really matter. The big part is like some of the stuff I do outside of work, you know, like I teach kids on the side on Saturdays, and that now is also online, and I don't really go outside a lot like I used to. So that has changed drastically. You know, and everywhere I go, if I do go out, everywhere I go is pretty much empty. But yeah, man, in terms of work, it's business as usual, man. We're still trucking along, still interviewing, still doing meetings. But it's just all of it's over Zoom.
So this is actually.
I like that. It's all over Zoom. Take note.
Buy some
take
Zoom stocks. It's definitely going to take note, whatever. Whatever, yeah. Haters. Well, I mean, Ray, you're kind of bringing up a good point. Your company have been set up for remote work and the infrastructure. You guys had this for years now, so the transition was flawless. But the thing is, a lot of AAA companies aren't really set up for this. I mean, with very few people out of the office. So kind of reaching out, what type of stories are you hearing? What type of difficulties are you hearing? You too, Richard. Are you hearing from your friends about how this transitioning is happening right now? Because
It's actually hilarious.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Go ahead, Richard.
All right.
Oh, okay. Sure. So, as he said, like for us, business is normal for indie. We were already set up to work remotely anyway. We've got folks like who are working like internationally too. So this didn't really change that much. And for my side job with working with Tencent, like it was already remote. Like, so, you know, I just had my first call with the designers over in Shenzhen over Zoom, which was a pretty marvelous software, and it actually went just as normal, you know. But yeah, for everyone else though, I think like for people who have like worked for companies that like, you know, day in day out, you've been going there for like over 5 years. Like I talk to them and they're kind of freaking out. It's like, oh my god, working from home, like it's so lonely. I'm so used to all the distractions. Or, you know, I'm not trying to like, you know, point fingers at anybody, but it's like, yeah, I've been doing this for a while. Like working from home, you just kind of get used to it, you know. So I think it's going to be a huge inflection point for the industry, like for the globe, like not industry, for everybody, when they realize like, wait, working from home, actually we can kind of get used to it, and there's like we can be more productive. And you know, I think that a lot of like industries are going to reflect on just like what some of the benefits are. Not every industry benefits from working from home, but like there's certainly, you know, video games are affected quite greatly by it.
Well, what kind of, and I guess I'll go back to this with Ray right here. I mean, what kind of stories are you hearing from your industry friends about this transition? Like what difficulties are you seeing since not all studios are kind of set up for this or prepared for this? Because the emergency kind of happened over a weekend and everybody was suddenly at home.
I would say that a lot of the studios absolutely are not set up for this, right? Without naming any studios, there's a few that have really stringent security requirements for the computers that are in their office, right? So you cannot work from home, right? There's no infrastructure set up. You can't get into the Perforce server. You can't even get into the work network. They don't know what VPN is, right? Like there's so many companies that were completely not set up for this. And there were some that were like, okay, this is the new world. We're going to buy 400 laptops. Or there were some that are like, oh, okay, we're going to install Citrix. And then everybody can just tunnel in from their home computer using Citrix to their work computer. And they never miss a beat, right? And then there's others where they're arguing over who should get access to the 100 licenses of Citrix, right? Like, so... Right. So then, you know, there was a wide variety of responses, and it was all a lot of folks who were trying to figure it out and are scrambling right now. And I find it really brought it to the surface, like how the video game industry is just used to having a studio of 800 people in some location all working together in one place and really are not prepared at all for remote working.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of issues with that aside from security, as you can imagine, right? With software suddenly having to work, the laptop solution is probably like the best solution because it comes from one source and then suddenly it's kind of dispersed. But that takes a long time to suddenly have these computers, especially with deliveries kind of coming to a halt with actual emergency supplies being kind of the priority. So Richard, I kind of want to hear your side. Like what kind of things are you hearing from your friends within the industry just suddenly transitioning and not being very prepared all of a sudden?
The main thing that I'm hearing from my friends is that it's really hard. Like a lot of the stuff that when you transition into working from home, if you're like working on an individual project or you're a leader, like you have to learn how to communicate with other people. That's the hardest part, because there's so much in person-to-person interactions that you just sort of lose. And so things naturally slow down, not only because like work is a lot slower, but then also it's like people just generally don't, like not developers, but like consumers generally aren't as interested in like investing money into new things. So there's definitely like, you know, how like the stock market is taking a crash, like that also is sort of reflected in how people are thinking about new technologies and new spending. So there's a, I mean, people are playing a lot more games, but they're also much more like worried about like their 401ks, they're worrying about their kids, they're worrying about their family, they're worrying about people that are affected by COVID themselves. So, you know, in addition to working from home being just a bit more challenging, like there's a lot of just like cabin fever, like the feeling like, you know, they just want to get out and do stuff, but they can't. And there's a lot of friends of mine who, are just discovering for the first time how they can actually work from home amidst a pandemic. So it's kind of a weird, I don't think we're ever going to go through something like this in the rest of our lives. It's definitely a once in a lifetime kind of thing, hopefully. And yeah, so projects have slowed down. It's harder to get news out. It's harder to, cause everyone's now online. So everyone like, there's no like big announcements as much. Like I know we're going to talk about some of this later on, but like, you know, when the PS5 was announced, I was like, really? What? Like, it's just news nonstop of like, you know, just like COVID everywhere. Like everyone's just like, oh crap, you know, are we on the curve going up? And so it's a different kind of working from home though. It's definitely affected by just like, you can't talk about the working from home without thinking about the reasons why we're working from home. So that's like the biggest change.
Yeah, the industry's definitely got thrown into the biggest fire possible for remote work. I would say a large part of the AAA industry was never really set up for this, but suddenly we're kind of thrown in with this, and with all the kids kind of canceled school, they have to kind of balance the distraction of just the kiddos running around and suddenly having to be totally disciplined in doing so. I mean, Richard, you're totally been in that situation, so you're kind of used to it. But even with the challenges of just suddenly the kids starting summer early, basically, it's a different type of mentality to like, well, I'm basically going to have to sit there and homeschool them in a way, and at the same time get stuff done on this like intensive schedule for a prolonged
time. Sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, I remember, like, I'm sure everyone kind of remembers when, like, shit hit the fan. For me, I was driving to my 401k financial advisor, and because I was going to ask him, like, hey, man, so my my 401k turned into a 201k. Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then, like,
I think you're failing our life if you're even trying to do any of that right now. Like, you should just let that sit there and let that marry.
I've not changed any of my investments at all, because, like, I thought about it, I talked to him through it. I'm not changing anything, but really what it was is like, I just wanted to talk to him and get his take on it. And then it was like, I got into my car, went to go pick up my kids, and then checked on my phone. It's like, oh, school's canceled for 2 weeks. That's not too bad. Then when I talked to some parent, they're like, no, dude, that's April 20th, not March 20th. I was like, oh shit. Wait, they're gone for 5 weeks. And I'm like, wait, is this like the last time I'm going to see you? Like, and then everyone was started panicking. Like all the teachers, all the parents was going to like looking at each other. Yeah. And then I was like, Leo, come here. We're getting out of here right now. And we're going to go buy some toilet paper, you know, like not really that, but like, I didn't know what to do at the time. It was just like, literally like in, 10 minutes, like everything just completely changed. And, it's definitely a crazy, crazy situation we're in now.
Yeah. I mean, GDC Richard still thinks that the kid's going to be back in April 20th, but bro.
No. School no, that canceled. Already got canceled. Right, yeah. No, that got canceled till May. Yeah. I pulled my daughter out of preschool. She's done preschool for the rest of the year. Right. And, yeah, you know, pretty I'm crazy. Pretty much assuming that my son doesn't have any school for the rest of this year. And who knows what happens in fall? I have no idea. Probably that's going to be pushed back for a couple months. Who knows?
But also, you know what's crazy about all this, right? I know a lot of folks that have kids in many different cities.
Yeah.
And there's some folks that have kids that are like, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do with my kids. They're out of school. That's it, right? And then there's others that are like, oh, no, my kids are doing classes online.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And like, and the school set up Zoom and they're just teaching online. That's what's happening right now. Right. So it's just shocking to me at how different schools are handling this. Right. Some schools are just like, nope, we're done. Yeah. And other schools are like, nah, you're going to still learn. Right. So
yeah.
I find it really interesting.
Yeah. I mean,
that was actually my number one concern. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. What was your number one concern?
Oh, okay. No, number one concern actually when we picked up the kids was like, I want their education to continue. I think it's important that they learn. And our school has like these programs on Chromebook that the kids use as part of their homework assignment. And now I swear I got like 30 emails today that from our elementary school that has like updated programs and assignments and stuff like that. You know, and some people are actually attending school through Zoom. I was super happy to hear that our school had actually moved on enhancing our kids' program. So, you know, my wife and I take, you know, we sub out for like the homeschooling stuff. It's not too bad, but like it's definitely a change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what groups of kids actually succeed and are super disciplined. At least I'm looking at my kids. Some are looking at it like early vacation and extra Fortnite time. But I'm looking at my kids as where you can like surpass and play not just catch up, but like really leapfrog over these lazy kids, right? So, yeah, it's going to be a very interesting...
Tiger dad over here.
Tiger Woods. Hey, yeah. Tiger fam.
Dude, I extended his school hour since the cancellation. He's starting to 5 now, man. It's not 2:30 recess anymore. So, I don't know how you feel about this, Richard, but like, you know, I've been kind of toying with the idea. I never really wanted to pull him out of school and homeschool him, but it's something I've been kind of just been playing around for the last 6 months just because my kid especially has just been really bored with school. He's that type of genius, right? So this kind of throws back to you, Ray. Like there's a lot of children kind of at home right now, and you being the programmer of the group, there's a lot of advantages to having that skill set as part of the homeschooling curriculum. Is there any resources out there that you feel children can have access to? And this can go for you too, Richard. Any game design stuff that we can add to these parents that are trying to just keep their kids busy while they try to work, get them involved
in the industry? Well, Unity has some free classes that we have announced during this time that you're trapped indoors. There's a lot of our learning content is actually free right now. So
a 9-year-old can pick this up and figure this out.
People have always mentioned, I was actually talking to a friend of mine this weekend, right? And he mentioned how he thought C# was too much for his daughter right now because she's like 11.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I've seen some kids doing stuff in Unity and C# at the age of 9 and 10, and I was blown away. Right. So I don't think that is too young at all. And I definitely think it's a good way to really start them young if that's something they want to do. There's a lot of learning content that's actually free right now. We did a blog post about it. So that's what's up.
All right. How about you, Richard? Anything that you feel can be helpful? What are you doing with your kids, man?
Yeah. they have their Chromebook stuff, lessons from school. I mean, my kids are already into a lot of STEM stuff, so Osmo is really good for that. I think Osmo is like one of the best. Like, it's actually, I love their technology and having the interactivity with the objects and the camera scanning down. Like, you know, there's like a programming one, there's like serving pizza, there's even like fun like Frozen games for my daughter. Those I think are super what I would recommend. My kids are 4 and 6, so your mileage will vary depending on how old you are. Wait, Osmos, wait, what is this? Yeah, exactly that.
Is it right here?
Wait, did you have this? Yeah, that's it.
Dude,
like what the heck? That's crazy.
This is why you guys complaining about my broadcasting skills, right? This is what I can do. I can't do this nonsense. But yeah.
You can search for Osmo. Yeah, no. This one's super good.
I think everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just jump through, like, because you just need to wait. I don't even Osmos. Where the heck? Beware! No. Look up. No. I don't know what this is. Actually, yeah, you Osmos games. No, just look up Osmo and look up iPad.
Oh, okay.
And Osmo and iPad. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
So yeah, like basically like those things.
Oh, so actually starter kits, hands-on.
Yeah, and you can just choose you can go up to different ages and stuff like that. Honestly, like for one of our contractors, like just to throw it back to Ray a bit, like so we're doing our project in Unity, and with all of the extra time that one of our QA lead has, she I've asked her to just actually start learning Unity, so she can actually help out more, because she's got like triple her hours now. So but yeah, Coding Jam is a good one.
Nice. All right.
Yeah, yeah. This is
you've heard of this. This is fun. Do you approve this? Is this just?
I actually have heard of Osmo. I haven't really looked in too much into it, but it looks pretty cool for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I can check this.
Yeah,
out.
It's because Yeah, it's pretty good.
This looks.
The other one that I know.
Than me jumping.
The other one. Yeah, for sure. But the other one that I know is called Little Bits as well. Like if you want to learn circuits and stuff like
that. Yeah. That's one.
Little Bits
is good. Yeah.
Okay. Oh man. All right.
Yeah.
Talk to you guys more. Yeah.
Yeah.
This one's Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean the perks of actually this all happening is that, you know, I feel like I'm actually more active in my kids' education now and not just throwing them in a room full of strangers.
Not just telling them.
Yeah. So it's actually. And he's, I at least have on my side, I'm kind of seeing him more interested in this kind of more like, what do you call it? What's that?
Hands on.
Well,
Montessori, STEM learning,
Montessori type of
tactile approach.
Yeah. More like, whatever.
Montessori.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
More tailored to his own liking, yeah. But yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man.
Oh, check that out. All right, well, I think that's going to be very helpful for viewers out there and listeners, just having these resources, because we are having an influx of parents just not knowing what to do with kids and suddenly having to be parents again, which is a funny way of saying
As Ray said, though, if you... Yeah, if you are older, though, like learning and you're interested in video games or engineering, learning a game engine is always very good. I mean, there's great examples out there. I've already said many times that I have used Unity for almost all of my projects the last like 5 years, both professionally and personally. So I definitely think like if you have the bandwidth for it and you are interested in getting into the game industry, no matter what type of person you are, to definitely give it a shot and go for it. I mean, that's how I got my break in the industry, and Unity is certainly very powerful. So there you go, Ray.
All right.
I love it.
Well, all the parents out there, this is a great time while your kids are kind of running about to kind of introduce them to what you do, right? I think at least with my kids, they still don't really understand exactly what I do. That's not to say that I'm lazy.
I don't know what you do either, man.
I'm here to talk to you guys most of the time. So it's a great chance to get them involved early. I mean, we love the industry for a reason. So the next topic I want to talk about is Magic Leap, right? I don't know how much you guys have heard about this, but Magic Leap have been, they said that they probably been leaking info to try to kind of raise their prices on potential interest buyers out there as a way to kind of, you know, it's a crap it's not doing well. They're not finding a way to actually make money off of it. I want to know your thoughts. Let's start with Ray. You know, you've been kind of impressed with their tech initially, but it's kind of been in a slow grind. What are your feelings about it?
No, and I think the tech is still good, right? I mean, like, for what it is. But trying to sell something for like $2,500 and not really giving consumers any sort of reason to spend that kind of money. And it was never for consumers. It never made it to actually being a consumer device yet. It was just doomed because there's no market for it, right? Cool tech also has to get into the hands of the people, right? And so not doing that, you know, and of course the company was overvalued. They threw a whole bunch of money into it because AR is the new thing. So I don't know where they go from here. I have no idea. Because they've been real quiet lately. And then I did hear about how they're trying to sell the company, but like, I have no idea what's going on. And, but it's, none of this is shocking or news, right? Because, you know, it came out and everybody was like, cool. And then just went about their business, right?
So how far away do you think, Richard? I know you've never been a huge fan of VR, but you've been kind of more hopeful with AR technology, and Magic Leap seems to be still in the forefront of this. Do you feel like the future is still too far away for Magic Leap to kind of profit or make a stand with this? Or do you think that they're just feeling out the industry right now to see if there's even any interest?
I think they're definitely, I'm trying to catch up on this, because I had heard rumors about it. Most of the articles I'm like glancing through right now put it in a pretty negative light. When I read through some of this, it's just like, I'm a gamer, man. Like I need games in order to attract me, in order a thing. Maybe your crazy love for your Half-Life VR game, Brandon, will be the game that actually changes like my opinion on these things. Well, maybe it'll be something else. Who knows? Yeah.
Killer app.
All I know is that for. Yeah. So I look at the technology and I'm like, dude, does this work with like for people like me with glasses? Like that's like always the thing that I'm super sensitive about. So I feel like I'm not even like the target consumer for a lot of these things. So I'm always just thinking like, dude, it's going to be like this big bulky thing on my head on top of my glasses. So I don't know. I remember seeing like Magic Leap, like I feel like I'm pouring one out for them right now because I feel like they're donezo. Like I remember like seeing that video of them reacting to some AR shit like years ago. It was really cool, but then it was like, okay, is that it? Like, what's the actual game? What are the core loops? Like, how do I progress? Like, you know, like once you get past the novelty of it, it's like, what else is there? Because a game is a lot more about the sustained sort of like interaction you have with the game itself or other players. And a cool piece of hardware is just that. It's just a cool piece of hardware, you know, like I can buy sunglasses that play like music in the sides of their ears. Like there's always cool technology like that, but you know, I'm not going to buy it just because it's not necessarily a new experience. And yeah, I don't know, man. $10 billion seems crazy. I can't even believe they raised $2 billion. I feel like maybe I should have become an investment guy or person.
Bro, if somehow they do find a buyer at $10 billion, that is the Magic Leap right there. In 2017, they valued themselves at $6 billion, and 3 years later, they're trying to kind of get $10 billion out of it. But I think you mentioned a couple roundtables before, Richard, that you know, the gamer first kind of mentality definitely helps kind of drive the general consumer, right? And the phone is the best component right now for AR technology with Pokemon Go and whatever iteration next they have with that, or any other type of RPG or MMORPG MMO stuff, especially in time now, right? MMOs have been on the rise since everyone has been quarantined. So I don't think anybody's.
Yeah, I definitely think that. No, definitely not. It all comes down to the hardware and how accessible it is and how easy it is to use. I mean, it's kind of like when, you know, the last couple of weeks, I keep going like, Stadia, what's the value prop? You know, like, it's one of those things where it's like when I look at the VR headsets, and yes, it can give you like AR right in front of you, but as like it, the biggest threat to that is the phone, and the phones are always going to constantly get better. And even things like Pokemon Go is a great example of that technology and works that have a more seamless sort of plug-in into your life. Whereas like you have to literally give up a lot of your senses to play this game, Magic Leap or anything that requires VR. And so, you know, I look at a game like Beat Saber, and that's like taking that whole concept to like the like up to 11, and that works and that's cool. But then like that's just one game, and that's not going to be enough to carry like an entire industry, or at least like, you know, change the way that like the mass consumer thinks about the product. So we'll see.
I'll add to that so Half-Life Alyx, I actually dusted off my Vive yesterday. Okay. Yeah, I dusted, I like literally dusted off the Vive, and like had to spend like an hour and a half updating drivers and all the different peripherals. Mm-hmm. And I bricked one of them, and then I had to figure out how to restore it, and then I restored it, and then I installed the driver, and then 2 hours later I was actually playing Half-Life Alyx, and it's a great game.
Oh yeah,
it's a fantastic game. It's a fantastic game. Mm-hmm. It is the gold standard for a first person shooter in VR.
Yep.
I also then took off my headset within an hour, and then played Doom Eternal. so that will just put it all in perspective for you, right? Doom Eternal is way easier to get into, way easier to play. Half-Life Alyx is a great game. Like, and I'm playing it on a Vive. I'm not even playing it on the $1,000 Index, right? I'm playing on the lower spec hardware. And they did all of the VR things right in that game. Right, the gravity glove stuff is amazing. Like it's good, right? But after an hour, I was like, okay, I'm kind of, I'll come back to this, but I'm done. Let me play something that doesn't require all of this wire hanging out the back and like all of this craziness in my room, and like trying to make sure that I'm always facing in the right direction, and that my headphones don't get torn off my head because they're attached to my computer. Like, I didn't have to deal with all that nonsense that was kind of ripping me out of the immersion. Yeah. And just play Doom, which is also another great game. So like, you know, I don't know if Half-Life Alyx is enough, but I do know that it is something that if you're making VR, you definitely have to pay attention to. I'm also blown away. I'm blown away that Valve thought they could sell it for $60, and people are snatching it up, which is a price point that most VR games do not sell at.
I'm hearing a lot of people saying it's taking them at least 20 hours, which is really long for a VR to kind of go through it. Me too. Right? Yeah. I think I was playing at the same time you were, Ray. I have a better headset. I have the Oculus Rift S. So it was literally just the headset and the controllers. I didn't have any camera setup. So it was a lot easier, but there is some type of setup, right? Just the headgear is an extra step. And I do feel that pain and extra effort just putting things on to experiment. I will say that, like you mentioned, playing Doom Eternal is a lot easier to get in, and you actually probably spend a lot more time. I played about 2 hours of Alyx, and I had to take it off because I was like disoriented after a while, and I usually don't. But I was in it. That was probably the longest session I ever spent in VR, and I was like in the shower, and I was kind of just not quite out of that world yet. I was like, oh wait, okay, I'm in. It was really crazy because I never really spent that long in VR to suddenly go in the real world. And I was like, oh, wait, yeah, that's right. This is real life. So there was a statement with Gabe saying that we're closer to the Matrix than we really think we are. And it felt very true in that moment. I will say this.
Yeah, the immersion, like the feeling of immersion is really, really good. Like I have to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. It did make me want to play it in a warehouse, you know what I mean? Because you technically can walk wherever, right? You do have a teleport thing to kind of help, but like you said, not everyone has a huge space to completely walk around the VR space. But mm-hmm. I really wanted, I mean, that's probably where the omnidirectional treadmill can be very helpful. But it did make me feel like I want to walk around. Like I'm probably the 1% of VR user that is wanting to be active in the VR world. I want to walk around. But I want to go back to a month ago where I felt like Half-Life Alyx would be a major milestone for VR games to kind of step up from. I wonder, with Ray being like the Beat Saber hardcore, do you feel any differently after playing? Do you feel like there is a milestone that at least a new bar that a lot of VR games, at least, I mean, FPS is a sure thing, but like,
I feel like I haven't played a lot of it. I only played a little bit. Right. And I still think like Beat Saber is definitely by far, it's just a game. It's just my type of game. You know what I mean? Like, I just love that game. Mm-hmm. Right. So like, that's nothing I play is going to change my mind about that. But you know, like, yeah, just holding up my hand and aiming the gun and actually looking down the sight and then the gun fires where I expected to fire. Like, all of that felt really nice. And the gravity gun stuff felt nice. It's a little hard to kind of aim what objects you want to grab sometimes, but like, otherwise, like, it all feels nice, right? And it performed really well, even on my rig that's not the greatest, fastest rig in the world. Looked very nice. You know, like I have no real complaints about that game, right? But I feel if you're going to make an FPS game now, you have to look at Half-Life Alyx in VR. Like, you just have to, right? Because they did some interesting things. So
Does that make you
does it change the whole game? sorry. Like, does it change the whole game right now of VR in video games? I don't think so, right? Mm-hmm. But it's just really well done.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, if anything, are at least it's helping that industry, right? I think a lot of people are buying into VR and now are more open to trying VR games. And no, you don't think a lot of people tried VR for the first time actually bought a device because of Alyx, like a good percentage, or just too small percentage?
No, those folks would have to be some hardcore Half-Life fans to be dropping the kind of money they would have to drop to play that game. You know, you're talking between $1,000 to what's the cheapest? What's the Rift? The Quest.
The Quest is around.
Oh, yeah, but no, the Quest, you go
200.
Yeah.
Let me see.
I think the Quest is like $300-$400, right? And with the Quest to play Half-Life Alyx, you also need the sync cable to hook into the computer, right? Which is, I think, the sync cable by itself is like $50 or something, right?
Yeah.
$100 or $100, I can't remember. But anyway, but like the costs of entry is still very high, right? So if you're like out here in the world saying I have to play the next Half-Life game, I'm going to drop $400 to $1,000, I'm questioning your judgment, or you just have a lot of free money to still be spending, right? So,
so Ray, yeah, give me some. I do want to try to do this. The Index is supposedly have more finger control. Is that really the biggest perk?
Well, finger control and higher resolution screen.
Also, it looks better.
Like faster refresh rate, right? So it's a nice headset, but
yeah,
$1,000, man.
I just can't go back to camera setup. It's really nice with the S to just put a headgear on and just play. Like, I hate just location-based camera just everywhere. It just seems such a hassle. So I'm not ready to make that, unless the next Index, until the next Index. But I mean, that's just, I wasn't planning on talking to Alyx, but it's nice to kind of hear your thoughts on it since we did talk about it last time. I know we're boring Richard because he only cares about PC, other PC games.
No. I'm reading about... No. In other news, for people who aren't watching about Half-Life, I'm reading about how the guys who made, I think, the Pandemic, the Outbreak game, has donated $250,000 to COVID research, and they're making a game about stopping a pandemic. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. I did read reviews about Half-Life Alyx too. So I'm in. Yeah, I'm also watching. You're listening.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the best time you have some extra cash to donate to COVID because it gets your company on a bunch of headlines right now. So it's a smart marketing move. For sure. So I want to move on to the next topic. So this is something that we've been hearing as part of being in the industry, but in the current trends of journalism, there's a lot of expose and finally not being afraid of kind of standing up to these AAA companies. And Naughty Dog just recently in the past month have been in the headlines finally talking about malpractice, crunch culture, and more specifically, Last of Us 2. And one of the biggest quotes that I heard that 70% of people, specifically in the designer department, have left since Uncharted 2, working on that to working on Last of Us 2. So that's a huge amount of senior staffs and leads that have been constantly changing at that studio. And would love to kind of talk about what your guys' thoughts are on that. So let me kind of go over to Richard here. Design, I never really like to give you guys credit, but you guys do play a big part in games. And once a senior staff or lead staff leaves, there's a lot of figuring out the pipeline again. And it starts with you guys and trickles down to all of us and can cause a lot of delays, which they've always been having issues with. So hearing that, and it's not news to us, but maybe news to a lot of fans. What are your thoughts about this? Same old stuff.
So the idea that like people leaving Naughty Dog and it causing like a huge change. Like, sorry, I wasn't quite sure what the question was there, Brandon. I'm sorry.
Over the details. Yeah. So this is a Kotaku article that was released a couple weeks ago, actually. But the whole thing was talking about pretty much the crunch code culture there. Where, you know, developers are, you know, I'm sure you have friends and we all have friends there, right? Every game, pretty much 9 months out, they're in there from Monday through Saturday. They're working like 60 plus hours. And the only thing they try to make up with it is after a 2-3 year or now 4 or 5 year game cycle, they give their workers like 2 months off to kind of try to make up with that. But the biggest thing is that every... I would say summer, you would see a huge listing of pretty much every position for contract work every year, right? So for the layman, they would be thinking, oh man, Naughty Dog is growing, but mostly it's just replenishing burnout people. So that's where we're at. Kind of want to know your thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think crunch culture is healthy. I know, like, we've talked about it several times, and part of like ever since we had like I think a roundtable like 2 or 3 months ago, where I said like part of it is like people wanting to do their good job, so they actually volunteer for crunch and all that. I was completely wrong with that. So when I started reading more into it, actually after it, I started thinking back on my own experiences, like crunching a little bit at Blizzard, but it wasn't like crunching hardcore like this. I mean, I can't even imagine crunching for several years. Even if the game is like super great, like Last of Us or any of the Rockstar games are, like, it's not at all. I actually read about that like earlier. The construction worker getting fired because they thought that nobody was in the building when they were working.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, like,
it's like the rest of the about,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like
a lot of
video, it's so like video games like biggest.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Well, I mean, in their article, it kind of highlights how owners of the buildings of one night, right, construction workers was working within the building and there was an accident. Basically, something just fell off the ceiling. You'll normally, well, that is a big problem, but in this case, because of how culture is pretty crazy at Naughty Dog, there were actually people there, but thankfully no one got hurt, right? It's a great way to kind of start off the article, but this whole discussion about this is how they operate, and big game developers are not really hold as liable because they keep pumping out success, and there's a line out the door all the time for these type of game companies because of their prestigious position. And until they just have a miss, man. There's not really anything I don't think Naughty Dog will do. It's just, for me at least, right, on a personal level. Again, not reflecting any opinions of you guys. I don't want you guys to be in trouble. But I just want to say that it's just something that I see Naughty Dog being one of the biggest offender, and everyone kind of hold them in the highest regard from both fans and game developers. And they're just, we're probably permitting them to continue to kind of have this type of practice. And they're supposed to be a leader in the industry, right?
Well, I think there's a quote in the article actually that says they've never seen success any other way.
Yes.
So they don't believe there's another way of achieving it, right? And so that's that, right? And so as long as they make good games that are high quality, and then gamers and everybody else picks them up and says, "I can't wait to play that next Last of Us or that next Uncharted," nothing's going to change around this at all. And then also, it's funny, like in this whole COVID-19 era too, I saw there's a satire video game website there was a link from that going around where the headline was in the midst of COVID-19, Naughty Dog is permitting its developers to sleep at home. Right. And
is this like the video
Yeah, it's like Hard Times or whatever it was. I can't remember which one it was, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's funny. It's funny because it's also like, yeah, to see something like that actually happening, right? it is what it is, right? Like, yeah, they just don't know how to succeed any other way. And the games come out and they're great. And so they're like, yeah, that's the way you have to do it. And it's not the first time I've heard from people in the industry, not just Naughty Dog. I hear this a lot. The way to get quality is to sit here and work and iterate and get the quality no matter what the cost. Right. And then they justify it because then the game's successful. They make a lot of money. The bonuses come through. All right, let's do it again, right?
Yeah.
And that's just how it is. Mm-hmm.
And just to correct what I was saying,
yeah. If anything, Brandon, the main thing that I want to say is, like, I think crunch culture is definitely a thing in video game development. I think certain studios do it a lot more than others. I think certain countries do it a lot more than others. Like, you know, working with Tencent, like, they don't mind me if I send my design docs on Friday evening because they're still working on Saturday. Or like in different industries,
let's not even talk about China. Like, it's bananas in China. No matter how much.
Yeah. They're already back at work. Yeah.
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 Yeah. And then even like when you think about like Hollywood, like what's that studio that like messed up on Sonic, and then they had to do all the reshoots for it, redo all of his character modeling, and then as soon as they were done, they just like closed the studio just like that. I mean, that's just like extra brutal. I don't even know how. Like, there's no bonuses there for anybody. It's like, it's not like, at least, like, you know, you work at Naughty Dog, you crunch like hell, you know, you slowly move up the corporate ladder, you get a lot bigger bonuses. But like in Hollywood, like, man, you just. I don't even know how you describe, like, how much money did like all of the Marvel, like the MCU movies make, and then look at the credits afterwards. It's like, you know, thousands of people, and you have no idea what kind of working conditions they are. So I think it's the same perception that people have of video games. It's like, fuck yeah, Last of Us 2, but then you don't really think about how it was made. Like, nobody wants to know how the sausage is made, man.
Yeah. Although I think the main difference between video games and movies, though, is if you go into a movie job, that's the job. The job is to work on that film, mm-hmm. right? And you are by default a contractor, right? Where in the video game industry, a lot of folks, you know, it's a full-time job, you know, you're just at that studio, and every year for 3-4 years, you know, you're just going to be crunching and killing yourself, right? And then layoffs happen if the game doesn't do well, and you're like, oh, what happened, right? So it's a little bit different, but yeah, like, mm-hmm. the work and the crunch is still crazy in both cases.
Right? Yeah. And just to kind of circle back to what you were saying for the Sonic reshot, well, they didn't reshoot anything. They just redid the whole visual effects. It's NPC, moving pictures or something. They are a big visual effects company and they had to close down. It's very similar to Life of Pi, right? As soon as they won the Oscar, they closed down. And
it was just their Vancouver studio because, of course, they could do the work cheaper somewhere else.
Of course. So they're still going on. It's just that particular studio that was working on that reshoot. And that well too. It's an unsustainable model. Obviously, a visual effects company should be like a warning sign for game developers. I mean, we can never really compartmentalize all our work for a game in that way. There still needs to be a core team to kind of manage all the moving parts of a game. So thankfully, we have that. But trust me, they are trying their best to kind of minimize the core team as much as possible and utilize the outsourcing. Just to kind of close on this topic, though, with Naughty Dog, one of the effects I'm hoping that this remote working is going to help with, and I mean, it probably applies to them the most, as Ray was kind of mentioning before, they're not really ever set up for remote working at this huge capacity, and they have this Last of Us 2 and crunching mentality. So kind of like what you guys are talking about, a lot of deadlines will be pushed. Kind of want to see how they react to this. I'll be very surprised if they're going to still march on with their dates. I would say this. I am glad that I think from the crunch culture to no crunch culture, there's an in-between where we're actually having people crunch at home instead and sleeping in their own beds. So I think we need that this essential move right here to kind of have ease that concern, right? Just at least have these people, if they're crunching, they're working up till 2 a.m. in their own home. And I take comfort in knowing that a lot of Naughty Dogs are sitting at home right now crunching on Last of Us 2. I'm pretty sure they're sitting at their computers, but...
Go to sleep. That's all I have.
Please go to sleep. Sleep.
Yeah. One last thing before I move on to the next subject with this COVID, going back to the first topic, do you think the industry is going to open this up more? Like, let's take Naughty Dog for an example as we're talking about them. Do you think that they're going to go back to their old ways or they're going to mix it more with this type of mentality? No? All right, Ray, shaking your head. Go ahead and take it. What do you think?
No, definitely not.
Nah. there's no big... amount of wisdom that I can impart here, but you know, money's money, the industry's the industry. When we go back to normal, everything will go back to normal. It's sad, but like I'm very pessimistic on that.
Richard, you feel about the same way that these big companies experiencing this for the next 2-3 months will suddenly just like scratch all the IT infrastructure? Let's just go back to working in the office all the time.
I think that the quote in the Kotaku article that said they've not known success any other way just hints just how kind of conservative their thinking is and how kind of how short-term thinking it is. So I think working from home is a model that works for certain types of products. But for something like Last of Us, where you're like really handcrafting every single microsecond of it, and then you have all these other game systems, like there's just no way. They're going to put everybody in as soon as COVID goes away, they're just going to pull everyone back in or find people that can pull into it that are eager and all that stuff. It's just a vicious cycle.
Like, video games is highly collaborative and creative and people need to talk and figure stuff out. You could do Zoom meetings or do some sort of virtual whiteboards or whatever. But we're just not there yet for some of these disciplines, and they just need to be there in the office talking with the creative director or the lead artist or the art director or whatever. Right. They need to work together in a collaborative environment. So I don't see that changing that much.
It was a good try then. Like the pandemic will actually promote this idea, but if anything, it'll help more like outside vendors kind of help with these studios into being open to remote working. I don't know. Maybe virtual studios are going to be a result of this on the rise, right? So I want to move on to our next topic. It's kind of like a thing that I like to tease. We don't have to spend too much on it. but GameStop counted itself as an essential business because, well, I mean, they're on their last legs. I really do think they already pulled their last move, having Regis trying to pull the shit around, which is pretty much every move that big companies do before they go bankrupt, right? And so I kind of want to hear you guys' thoughts on this. I mean, since then, they actually have closed the stores because they were like,
yeah,
there was reason, right? Kind of told.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What kind of
I have a friend have of
yeah.
I think it's absolutely ridiculous. Gaming essential. Yeah, sure. You could say anything that you spend your time on is an essential, but like there's so many ways to get games. I had a friend of mine who has been working at what is this?
This is just what? Talking about
this is an ad. Hell is that's a random ad.
Oh no, that's an ad. I thought it was like I was like, that has to do with GameStop? That would have been like dope. You know what's better than going to the dentist? Going to GameStop or something like that. Anyway, the I have a friend of mine who's worked at GameStop for a long time. I don't know if you guys knew this, but the way that they worked was like they would go into the store, but customers couldn't come into the store, and you had to, and they would go outside of the store and give you your items.
Right.
So it wasn't actually like people could go to GameStop, but so it was just so strange. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely tried to profit from this, right? So Ray, where were you? I know you
well, like I've been on here a few. I've been on here a few times, and I don't think I've said anything good about GameStop ever, yeah. Right? So you already know my. So you already know my opinion, right? Is it an essential retail? Hell no, nah, of course not. if everybody's home right now, they can just download the games directly to their machines, right? No. On every platform that they want to play on. You don't need to go into that depressing, dark dungeon of sadness, right? You just don't need to go there, right? And of course they said that because, of course, they want to stay open and make some money while all of this is going on because, again, they want to suckle the soul out of life, right? Like just know. Look at this place. Look at these pictures. Anyway, no, nah, man.
Pictures, by the way. The most
traffic. I can't say anything good about GameStop at this point. It just needs to go away, man. It just needs to go away.
I think you're going to get your wish come true because I really do feel they're signaling all types of signs that they're going to close this year, pulling all types of bullshit. I mean, the memories have been nice. It's always fun.
If only could go there and play like board games, man, that would have really turned it around or add like some bowling alleys to it, some pinball machines.
Richard's dentist office. Yeah, probably have more profit.
Richard remembers our past conversations about this. I love it.
Of course, I do. I love it. I think we said we wanted to go to San Francisco to go to that golf course where you can drink and get cocktails.
I do want to check that
out. Oh, yeah.
In San Jose, let's do it. Top
golf. Well, we're almost at I kind of want to talk about this last topic. So PS5 kind of went on to have their little announcement, but it was disengaging within the 10 minutes. It was some kind of bullshit. This is the kind of Ray porn that he loves, right? But for the rest of us, we're like, what the fuck is this? It was literally this guy talking in front of a green screen with these fake people in the front.
Mm-hmm. Wait,
and we're supposed to buy into that. So I don't know if Richard...
Wait, are those people? No, dude, no. This is... No, I didn't out, see it. Dude. No, it's I can immediately tell that that's bullshit. Yeah.
Dude, I was...
And it's moving, too.
Yeah, I saw them moving a little bit. That's...
It was a beta switch. Oh, wow, that looks
so
dude.
Fake.
But, like, they talked about stuff that I was snoring through. So I think it's fair to at least go over to Ray, right? Ray, at least can you break this down? Was it relevant? Was there anything about this interesting? Because they have yet to...
Okay.
Right? Look at that.
Let me break it down two ways, right? First of all, you have to understand that this was going to be a much bigger thing at GDC.
Okay.
What is GDC for? GDC is for game developers. It's not for the consumers. It's for game developers, right? And so if they're going to do a substitute event, it's going to be all about the megahertz and the gigawatts and all that nonsense, right? And it's going to be about SSD and the fast loading speed and all that, right? It's going to be about the technical details. And we got the technical details, right? And the specs of the hardware, which is cool. Like, that's exactly the type of event this was. If people went into expecting more, they don't know what GDC is about. Period. Right.
This looks like a state of the SNL sketch, dude. It looks like a joke. So,
yes, but anyway, I won't even get into it. Right. But the main thing to take away from this, though, is like, from with all the stats, all the numbers and everything, is like, they're really pushing hard on load times, and they want seamless load times, and they want to reduce. They're doing some interesting things in that area, right? And so there's a lot that I'm excited about to see how games utilize this hardware in order to do no load screens, ultra high speed streaming, all this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So like that's the news, and that's what it means to gamers, right?
Okay.
To gamers, it's like, oh, like I can just get into my game and play it right away. Oh, that's like, that is the new thing, right? Mm-hmm. And the hardware is also like the GPU, CPU is also great, right? So performance is going to be crazy. Like, we might actually start seeing games that actually at 4K, actually running at 60 native, or just running at 60 with some sort of dynamic resolution setup. Like, there's a lot to like about the announcement. But of course, was it dry and technical and absolutely boring? Hell yeah, of course it was.
Yeah.
Right. So I want to see the games now, right? So I want them to start talking about, okay, here's what we've actually built on this.
Yeah. It's worth noting that even with this being boring, and it was a total bait and switch, in my opinion, it had 13 million views, right? And I saw an article measuring it with the Xbox, what do they call it? Scarlet? What's the next one? One X?
Xbox Series X. Xbox Series X.
That only garnered 10 million. So even with its boring ass presentation, it beat Xbox's launch announcement with like typical gamer exciting stuff. But you're saying the hardware was worth it. It was at least something that moved you.
Yeah. And also, mind you that the Xbox announcement too was very technical as well, right?
Okay.
These are GDC talks. This is during GDC where they're talking to developers making games for the system. So of course, developers making games for the system want to know how the hell this thing works.
Yeah.
Right. Like at this level. Right. So it just makes sense. Right. Like talking about like my Xbox came out, was like, you know, constant. Like if you saw the digital, it was the Digital Foundry expose, right? Digital Foundry did a big article about Xbox Series X. And it was just like talking about locked frequencies of the CPU and the GPU and what frequencies they were at, talking about compute units and compute cores, where most folks that like people that are just playing video games just wanted to know, oh, I have more compute units than this other thing has, right? Just to say, hey, I have a bigger number than you, without really understanding how that stuff actually works. So like, you know, like this is not the real news. You want to see the games and you want to see how they perform on the hardware.
All right. So I'm going to go over to Richard real quick. Right after I asked Ray this one thing. So just comparing the boxes, right? Is it pretty much the same, or what are we saying right here? Is there anything you saw from the PS5 that you're like, oh, okay, that's more interesting than I thought it would be?
I don't know. I'm just a gamer. I need to see the games. I think, like, honestly,
because like that question to Ray first. I know you're the game designer. You don't care about that stuff.
Yeah.
I do care.
If
you put them on paper side by side and look at all, you know, honestly, the hardware that they're using is very similar to each other. They're all based on AMD, RDNA, Zen 2 architecture, both of them. So it's pretty much the same CPU and GPU, but with custom modifications on both ends. So on paper, the Xbox Series X looks more powerful on paper.
Wow.
Right. But there's a lot of things that in the Sony talk they were talking about, like I said, with the hard drive and the frequency clocks and all this stuff, that it really is going to come down to the games, right? And I think I've been on here before where I said, like, Xbox don't really have the games companies right now, right?
What are you talking about?
And so,
they got Minecraft. They got whatever shit Obsidian is doing.
honestly, Microsoft has the games. If you look at it from, like, if Game Pass is their way of making money,
right,
they have the games for that, and they have the studios for that to give people a variety of different games, right? Mm-hmm. Sony is like, nah, we're just going to deliver you hits. Right, this every first party game is going to be a hit, right? And so it really just comes down to what those games are.
Yeah,
honestly, it's because at the end of the day, that's what sells boxes. At the end of the day, it's games. Games sell boxes,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, Ray, is it true? Like, I'm reading this on Tech Radar right now that PS5 could potentially support backwards compatibility. Because that's like old school PlayStation 2 days that I'm thinking about. This stuff, and that sounds really cool if it can do that.
Well, the only backwards compatibility that they're talking about is PS4 games, right?
It doesn't go all the way back. Oh man.
No,
that would have been so dope. Microsoft, I'm playing my
Microsoft is like, nah, we're backwards compatible to like Xbox 360, right? Like, they're like,
we
got it all covered. That's cool. No, I think they'll have a much bigger. I haven't thought about backwards compatibility in a long time, but that's really cool. I think, like, especially now with like a lot of players, like, they have to like dig up games that they've like played buried like a long time ago because they're in quarantine now. Yeah, buried in the garage. Yeah. You know, and so like saying that you have backwards compatibility when you have a library as big as fuck, you know, it's like, you know, people like that stuff. I definitely would appreciate that for sure.
It's actually interesting you're mentioning this, because I think people appreciate it, but the actual people, the number of people that actually use it, like in practice, mm-hmm. like for real, is like really, really small.
Yeah.
Right. And like, you do all this work, all this blood, sweat, and tears to get the emulation or whatever stuff to work. And then like, nobody uses it, right? You know what I mean? But then, of course, it's a major selling point when you want to sell the console, right? Because everybody's like, oh, yeah, you have to be backwards compatible. And then the five people that really care about it, use it, and everybody else just has their old console is still hooked up, and they just play games on that, right? So it's really weird.
Yeah. I see it as a long-term investment, like the same way that DVDs kind of left, you know, in the streaming world for movies, kind of just have that huge library of inventory, right? I see once they have those $10 subscription up and ready from both Xbox and PS5, that's going to be a huge selling point to be able to play PS2 games on your phone or whatever, right? So I think it's definitely worth the investment for them to do it now, but I think you are correct. Right. For the PS5 people that actually buy the console, they're not going to really mess with that as much, but the subscription service is going to be huge. Just having thousands of games available for 10 bucks a month, man. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. That is a dream.
Game Pass.
Imagine
Game Pass. And then you add Project X Cloud, like, that's Microsoft's strategy, mm-hmm. right? They want you playing their games everywhere, right?
Yeah, very smart.
And that's gonna be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting year, and we're at the hour mark. But I also want to have your guys' final thoughts, right? I'm very surprised that they're going forward with these consoles at the end of the year. Will there be people still having jobs to buy these things? Like, is that still happening? It seems insane that we're going through this like economic downturn, and then people will have enough like $500, I'm guessing, right, to kind of shell out to buy these consoles. I'm very surprised that they haven't delayed this.
I'll say this, right? I think all these things are coming out at the end of the year, right? So Christmas, right? I think, like, you know, everybody's hoping that this will be over long before Christmas.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what everybody's thinking is, and that's what everybody's hopes and dreams are. Because if it is going on much longer, like, yeah, it'll be real bad, I think, if that was to happen.
Right.
Yeah. I think that what in the optimistic case, and I want to be optimistic because I've got kids and
you don't want
you know, and all anymore. That stuff. No. I love them having home. But instead, I'm talking to you. No, I'm just kidding.
I'll still be here.
Yeah, no. I want to believe that we'll beat the COVID-19 before the end of the year for sure. I think if we do, I think what will happen is, you know, the global economy will kick back up slowly, though. I mean, the damage is done. There's not a lot of people have lost jobs. Unemployment rate is ridiculous right now across the globe. But when things stabilize, I think people will want to start buying stuff again. And I don't know, like, how that compares to a normal economy when you have these announcements and you have all the conferences to build up the hype. But I do think there's going to be, you know, once the coast is clear, like, a lot of people are just going to come out of their homes and just want to party and do things and live life like they used to, you know. And so end of the year is a pretty good time. Always a good time because of Christmas and the holidays and all. So we'll see. Yeah, I'm hoping. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, for everybody out there that is going through this, we are at home with you. And if China is any type of sign of hope, you know, it seems like they are in a better position after like 4 months or so. So it seems to be going to take us through the summer, like everybody kind of am guessing right now. So by that time, we'll save enough money to get a PS5. I guess that's the plan.
or the next iPhone, which will probably cost twice as much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because of
that's the thing we actually didn't talk about, because like there was no mention of price,
right?
And I'm interested to see how much these things will actually cost as well.
Can it really cost more than $500? There's no way. I don't think people will accept more than $500.
Wait, I don't understand. Yeah. Like, phones are so goddamn expensive now.
It's not
like,
the same, man. It's a different type of mindset. Yeah, it's crazy, but like,
I know, but still. It's, yeah.
What it really is, folks don't actually buy their phones, quite frankly.
Yeah. Right.
Like, yeah, folks buy
their phone for $100 bucks and are in their plan for 3 years, right? So.
Yeah.
With a console, you got to drop that money
right now.
You got to drop all of it right now. Yeah.
That's the Raymond.
You do layaway. You could probably do some layaway or something on the console.
Layaway. Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward more and more to hearing about their Project X Cloud, their Sony subscription model. I think that is the future. A great way. I am enjoying at least my no cap internet right now because of the COVID. So that is one perk. Which also means that they never really needed to kind of data cap us at all, which kind of makes them even shittier. Just making us go through all that. But in the meantime, I want to thank you guys, Raymond, Ray Graham. You can find his Twitter at, I'm going to have your handles next time so they don't have to memorize this. Where can they find you, Ray? At Waterass? How do I say it?
Yeah, it's Waterass, and it's WADARASS.
All right. Thank you, Ray, for coming on. And of course, Richard Q, where they can find you on Twitter.
Yes, they'll find me at Twitter at missing_tooltip.
All right. I'll promise you guys I'm going to tap into my graphics department and get you guys Twitter handles up for next time so they don't have to memorize it. But we do have listeners out there, so we do have to repeat it anyways. So that concludes this month's roundtable. I want to thank you guys again. You know, we're here every month, kind of just round the news. Join us at any point live or through the comment section and hit these guys up in your Twitter handle. If you have take offense to anything that Ray or Richard says, go ahead and talk to them directly. Don't have to go through me.
Definitely talk to Brandon about that.
I want a global opinion of what's you know, all our topics, and we always have fun here. So I want to thank you guys, and see you guys next week. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are liking the podcast, go to the Apple iTunes store and give Game Dev Unchained a 5-star rating. This will help spread the joy and love and exposure for the podcast, and we thank you very much. If you want to continue the conversation, go to our Discord, which can be found on our website, www.gamedevunchained.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at BlueChamps, BlueChamps. You want to catch these episodes live every Tuesdays and Thursdays, go to twitch.tv/blue_champs. Email me any of your concerns or questions that you want me to read aloud at the beginning of each episode at info@gamedevunchained.com. And if you want to further support us and help unlock the next feature, which is the voicemail feature, go to patreon.com/BlueChamps. This gives listeners a chance to kind of call in, leave a message for both me and the guests to answer your deepest, darkest questions and comment on your deepest, darkest secrets. Thank you, everybody.